Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Asian Avengers. So weak.
The Asian Avengers. So weak. So fuckable, bro. You know? Whoa. There's five Asian guys together.
Together. Did you ever go through a stealing phase?
Do I think everyone should have a gun? Maybe.
Or you can look me up. I don't care. I'll fight you. I don't care.
You want to get high as fuck? You like opium?
And welcome back to another episode of Asian Not Asian Podcast, a podcast where two Asian guys not from Asia talk about American issues no American cares about. I am your host, Fumi Abe.
And I'm Mike Nguyen.
Today we're coming at you live from Brooklyn, New York. Today is January 9th, second week into 2021. And shit's been crazy, but before we get into it, if you're listening to this on your podcast, or sorry, your phones right now, please take a screenshot and post it on Instagram stories. Tag us at Asian Not Asian Pod. We love hearing from you. And if you're iTunes listeners, please leave a review. And if you want more content from just me and Mike, go to patreon.com/AsianNotAsianPod for bonus episodes and nudes and all kinds of good stuff, babies. Check it out.
So many nudes.
A lot of nudes.
Dude, I can't believe you're totally right. It's only the second week of 2021, and I think we had a good first week of 2021 because the first week of 2021 was only Friday and Saturday. It was 2 days long. I was like, this is a banging week, dude. Then third, and then all downhill from there.
Yeah, so. I got cocky too. Like, I did this thing, like, I like just turned off the internet for like a little bit just to, you know, chill.
Cool.
It's only a couple hours, which isn't that long, but I feel like in my generation, that's a very long time to stay off your phone.
It is.
So I did that, and then I had to like film something with BuzzFeed, so I like logged on and I was like talking to them, and they're like, "Did you see the news?" And I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" And then I turn it on, and it's just fucking anarchy in DC. and your people were there,
yo,
Mike.
Yo, shouts. Okay, I was saying this before. All right, I'm so used to seeing talk conversations about diversity in every kind of media that we do that. When I was watching the coup attempt, I was watching the C-SPAN and NBC News and everything, and I was like, there is not enough diversity in this coup attempt. Okay, there's just a bunch of white guys. Come on, we've evolved past this. Come on. But then I saw a couple of Vietnamese flags, South Vietnamese, Republic of Vietnam flags, and which is nice of them to get be invited, I guess. And and you know, like, of course, there's like confusion and embarrassment and stuff like that. And you saw some other thing. There was like some things with it was like a Filipino symbols and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I tweeted this, and I have to say that Vietnamese people are at this coup isn't surprising, because Vietnamese people, we love coups.
That's your thing.
All right. We love coups. And I wanted to like make sure that I was right about this joke, so I Googled this. And you just type in Vietnamese coup, and a page of coups show up. 1960, 1963, 1964... Which, by the way, 1964 has a January coup, September coup, and December coup. I mean, it's not even like an anniversary thing. Dude, they're doing it quarterly at this point. Yeah, this and 1965.
Like, it's like Googling Michael Jordan MVP, you know.
Yeah. Chicago Bulls. Which one are you talking about, bro?
Yeah.
It was wild. So, I mean, Vietnamese people, I mean, I'm starting to think that maybe we're actually have been so confused about this democracy thing, because we're just like, we're so used to coups. We're like, we haven't had a solid coup in a while.
Yeah. They just miss home. They wanted to feel nostalgic.
You know what? I haven't had a military junta shoot the president in the back of the head in a while. So let's have a coup. Why not?
Yeah.
That was pretty crazy.
Yeah. There was like a Vice article and everything like that. And it's funny, because like those articles are written like, I think a lot of people were like confused. They're like, why are there Asian people at this coup, you know?
Yeah,
but I know from being friends with you that's your thing. You guys,
Vietnamese
love,
people, I'm you telling guys you guys, it. Okay? I mean, it's partially a joke, but partially I'm looking at the history of Vietnam. We don't have democracy. It wasn't like we're going to totally, you know, like a long tradition with our version of George Washington, and right, we're going right. to you know, kick out the British, and then we're going to have a landed gentry, and we're going to have a bicameral legislature, and we're going to have representative government and stuff like that. We didn't have any of that shit. We had the Chinese for a long time. Then we had the French for a long time. You know, a quick cameo by the Japanese.
Hell yeah.
Then we got then the Americans. And so for us, it's like, if anything, democracy is like very strange to us. So we were... Yeah. We were like, let's do this Vietnamese style. When somebody said coup, we were just like, dude, we're tailgating.
Okay, this is how stupid I am. This is how stupid I am. I didn't actually know what a coup was. I thought I knew what a coup was, but only from like AP history or whatever. I'm like reading about the French coup in like the 1700s. But like, you know, you were talking about this earlier. A lot of people in Vietnam at the time, they were like generals or army people, and they just had an army at their disposal. They had tanks. I feel like if I had 30 tanks and a bunch of dudes following me, like, I might coup. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I might come out as a coup. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Have you tried the coup? It's great. Try the coup.
That's what happens. Dude, if you say, if a Vietnamese person says, have you tried the coup? White people think it's food.
Yo, have you tried the coup? It's so spicy, man. Oof, it's so good. Try the January 1964 coup. It's so delicious. It's wild. I think this technically wasn't a coup because of something. I think there weren't enough tanks involved. I don't know what it is. There's like some specific political thing about it. That is what's happening. And we're so excited to have the guest we have on. I don't know how I'm transitioning from coup to this, but
we're going to talk about the coup,
and we're just going to, because he's somebody we're very excited to have on. We've been trying to get him
for so long.
We
love him so much.
But he's very funny.
But he does not know who we are, and I'm okay with this relationship. It's very senpai.
Yes, exactly.
That's kind of my energy, you know.
So right now, we're very excited about the senpai leading the dojo right now. So who's our guest today?
Our guest today is a comedian, writer, actor. You can see him on Netflix's new show called History of the Swear Words, hosted by Nicolas Cage. He's been on Big Mouth. He's got this hilarious podcast awesome. Called Urgent Care with Mitra Johari on Earwolf. And so please welcome the hilarious Joel Kim Booster.
Yay! Thank you, guys. I love that transition. Speaking of coups, let's bring on Joel Kim Booster. I'm about to coup this podcast. Hey, this podcast is mine now, bitch.
We surrender. This guy's rolling up with the comedy tanks. Oh, man. Thank you so much. I mean, how are you doing, man? I know you're out
I'm
in LA.
Good.
How's everything going?
It feels like this has been the longest year of our lives already.
Well done.
Yeah, it is crazy. It's crazy that, like, Bean Dad was this year.
Oh,
Bean
my
Dad
God.
Bean Dad was the first big news, the first big internet news story trend. Like, he was the first villain of 2021.
Right.
And now we've already moved on to a coup. Things escalated really, really fast from a dad who refused to open a can of beans for his daughter to now there are people sieging the Capitol. It is crazy.
I do miss that. I miss Bean Dad. I'll say it. I'm going to miss him.
Yeah. So, Simpler times.
Did you watch a lot of it? I was like glued to the TV.
I didn't leave my bed that entire day, hardly. It was a crazy, crazy day. And it was weird because I was like, I don't know. It was coming off of the Warnock on Ossoff win. So I was like feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, you know, things are already starting to turn around this year, you know? I was like, just watching the MSNBC footage of it happening so quickly, I was just like, oh, this is nuts.
Yeah. Somebody was like, did you see the news? Because I read about the Georgia thing the morning, and I was like, oh no, like did people, you know, fuck with the election over there? Like, are they not winners?
Right.
And I could have never imagined this coup thing, but like, I didn't even know how to search for this on Google because there was just like so much information.
Yeah.
So I literally just typed in like, hey, what's happening right now? Like on Google. Because I didn't even know how to like fucking go about this, you know? It was crazy.
I feel if you do type what's happening right now, Google will be like, oh, girl, let me tell you about this hot tea right now. You know, that's the energy that is 2021. Thank you so much for coming on to the show. I don't even know where we can start to talk to you. I guess I have a story about how I've met you before. I don't know.
I was going to say,
okay.
I was going to say really early on, I was going to say, I've actually met one of you, but I won't tell you which one it is.
Okay.
And I was hoping to sort of sow the seeds of discord in the podcast early on, but you just sort of blew up my spot.
Oh, so. I'm sorry. I've told Fumi about this story many times, because I'm just like, I was like, oh my god, I've met him before, and he like touched my hand once, and it was amazing. It was like meeting Jesus, and I could see now. So yeah, it was. I don't know if you remember it, because I remember it a certain way. So I remember
was this, Mike? Take us back.
God, I don't know. First year
had to be 2014, because that's when we started.
2014, when I first started doing comedy, and I was very, very new. I mean, it was like my third month of comedy, and I was like finding my way into the New York comedy scene. And there's an open mic at a bar restaurant called Revision, which is in the East Village. Mm-hmm. Happened to be really near where I was working. And I didn't know this at the time, but it was like a cool mic. And by cool, I mean like it was like the mic that you went to kind of flex in front of other comedians.
That Revision 2, that was Christy Coffey's mic, right?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. And that was like, you got a minute and a half.
Yes, very short.
Oh my God. Super short.
Like, if you win at the end of that mic, it's like you waited 2.5 hours to do 90 seconds.
Yes, 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 yes. Yes, yes, exactly. It was like, it was packed. It was tons of people. Yeah. They never said no to anybody. There's always like 60 people in there. I remember I was always scared of all the mics. I was very scared of all of them. And that one I was really scared of. I just instinctively knew this was like something different. And I remember one time I went and I happened to go first.
Whoa.
I just happened to go first, and I went up there, and this is probably the only time I've ever done this, but I stopped in the middle of 90 seconds. I stopped at 45, and I was like, I'm sorry, I'm very nervous. I have to go. And I left. I was so afraid. I was just like so afraid of it. And I remember going to this mic, and I would see this Asian dude, this cool Asian guy. And I was like, oh man, cool Asian guy. At the time, I was also kind of a cool Asian guy. I had really cool big baggy pants on. And I was like, hey, I could be cool friends with this cool Asian guy, because I didn't see a lot of Asian people at all.
Yeah, I think you know? It was just you, me, and Brian Yang. Are you sure you didn't meet Brian Yang?
There's no way I could confuse you with Brian Yang. No offense to Brian Yang. I love you. So I remember seeing you, and I was like, I'm going to be friends with this guy, because why not? And and I remember you were very funny, and I could tell you were like, you know, much more advanced than I was. And I remember I went up to you after, like, I followed you, like, we both got off the train once at the same time, and I like followed you up the train steps. And I was like, hey man, what's going on? You going to Revision, blah blah? And you're like in the zone. You're just like, yeah man, you know, I came from my day job, blah blah blah. And I was like, yeah man, what do you think of this mic, man? Isn't it so scary? And he's like, and you were said, oh yeah, man, such a good supportive mic. And I was like, what? This is the supportive mic? I'm terrified. And I remember it was like a movie, because I stopped in my tracks and you just kept walking, and I was just standing there in the sidewalk, just like dripping sweat, like, holy shit, I don't know what I'm doing. So I don't know if you remember it that way. You know, I was probably just annoying you.
I don't remember it exactly that way. I don't remember it being like the moment, but I just remember like you do clock every other Asian person that you see doing stand-up, especially 100%. During that period. There weren't a lot of us in New York at the time. And so, like, I don't remember, like, the moment we met, but I just remember you being a part of the fabric of the open mic scene for a time that I was doing it. But you know what's crazy about that mic is that there was a comic, and I don't want to give them any screen time or air time, so I won't name them. But when Christy was gone, there was a comic that used to run the mic in her stead, and that comic has since gone down like a huge QAnon rabbit hole.
No!
Super, super crazy. And was at the siege at the Capitol.
No!
Wait. Yeah. I know you're talking about. She does stuff with Compound Media, right?
Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah, this is like the Anthony Cumia, that shit. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And this comic was also responsible for, do you remember when Gal Gadot did the Imagine video really early in the
the
Imagine
pandemic
parody?
This person did a parody of it, but did Kung Fu fighting. And it was all about Kung Fu. I think it was maybe Kung Fu.
They're saying Kung Fu fighting. Yeah.
So public enemy number one.
Whoa.
I've decided.
Whoa.
We will not name them. We will not.
I'll tell you later, Mike. It's just crazy. I thought we used to be friends, and then I saw all the QAnon stuff and then the Kung Fu shit, and I was like, what the fuck?
It's such a show. I remember them being so normal.
Yes.
And like a former teacher, like all this stuff, and like Yeah, it's nuts. It's nuts how...
Part of me thinks, like, is this, like, just an attempt to get more followers?
Absolutely it is.
I think it's
a little bit of column A, column B. I think it was, like, it's chicken and egg, you know? Like, did they start doing it because they wanted more followers and then got more followers because they were doing it and then just kept doing it? Or did they really, you know, get invested in it and then got more followers and was like, oh, I should continue doing this?
This is that's crazy.
Really heavily.
What a way to bring it back to the larger thing we were talking about. I thought we were going to have a nice story about us meeting, and now all of a sudden it's this crazy QAnon thing. And so I thank you, by the way, for being extremely diplomatic about how I was a part of the fabric of the scene, and by that I mean crying and running out of the open mic.
Wait, I have a very quick we have not met Joel, but I remember this is probably before you. I think you moved to LA or I don't know when you moved to LA, but this is like, I think you moved when I was like 2-3 years into comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember you were at a show that I was doing at, do you remember the Experimental Comedy Theater?
Oh, yeah.
Like by Peter Luger's.
And The Annoyance was down there too.
Yeah. It was like around there. And I think you were going to do a show after the show that I was doing. And I was like setting up a joke about like something about like, you know, like a lot of Asian guys get disrespected online or something like that. And I think you had just heard that and you were like, woo. And I was like, hell yeah, that's Joe Kim Booster. and then my punchline was not funny. And I look over and he's like writing down something in his journal. I was like, no, where'd you go, Joel? Where'd you go?
He's writing down, don't be friends with Fumi.
Yeah. I was dying.
Do not do his podcast 6 years later.
Won't be looking.
Yeah. I was. That's my Joel Kim Booster memory. But
we knew you as someone who was going somewhere when we Fumi and I were first starting, right? But even now, you were saying that like, hey, you did notice other Asian people? Did you when you first started? And I know you started a while ago. You know, did you first notice Asian people? And did you try to do this kind of thing? Because right now, I think now there's like a bigger community of us. Or were you kind of like, you know what, I'm just going to do my own thing?
You know, it's interesting. Like, I don't know if it was a timing thing or if it was me specifically, but
yeah.
I do think that there was a little bit. It's both a gay comedian and as an Asian comedian. I think there was a lot right before I started comedy in like 2011. There was a lot of pulling up the ladder. After you sort of that mindset of like, there can only be one, you know, if as both like both within like other Asian comics and other gay comics. And so that started really changing around like when I started. And I think like, and I made a really concerted effort because and this was maybe partly out of naivete, like when I started, but I was like, when I'd see another gay comedian or another Asian comedian, I would always want to be friends. And I'd always want to be like, let's like join forces, you know, and like, and sort of like not adhere to the old rules of like there can only be one. And so I don't know, that started really early in my career, and that sort of was ingrained in me from a really early time in doing comedy. And so I like to think that I've always been sort of open. I mean, that story, Mick, did not make me sound super friendly to you.
It was for me an experience and just sort of for me, I didn't think of it as like, you know, this guy's not nice. It was to me, you know, I have so much to learn about comedy and how all this works and, you know, where are the spaces that I can practice and all these things. But yeah. I've always watched you, you know, come up and do different things. And now I wonder if you feel like, I think you would say that things are different, but at the same time, not different, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting what's changed and what hasn't changed. I mean, there's definitely so many of us now, and it definitely feels like there's room for all of us now. I mean, like what guys like Will Choi have done with Asian AF. It's been really incredible. I remember when Asian AF, which is, for those of you who are listening who don't know, it's a really popular Asian comedy show that's a variety. It's got improv, sketch, and stand-up comedians. I remember when that show first started out. It was at the UCB East Theater, RIP, in New York. And they gave them the worst slot imaginable, which was Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock. Tuesday nights at 11 p.m.
Yeah, yeah.
And still that show, every time I would go or any time I would be on it, was sold out.
Yep.
Was always sold out. At Tuesday at 11 o'clock because Asian people showed up because they wanted to see. There was a thirst for it. It wasn't even like, I feel like part of it was like us as Asian comedians saying like, let's get together and let's create stuff together. Like there's no reason there should only be one of us on the lineup. And then also the community of Asian people who are consuming comedy saying, we want to see a whole show of Asian people. We're tired of just seeing one in these lineups. And so both of those things together sort of come together and created what I think is a really awesome landscape of Asian comedians that we're seeing now today.
For sure.
Many of us.
I mean, if anything, there's probably too many Asian comedians.
Yeah, we gotta vote some of them out.
Yeah, come on, buddy.
Yeah, we talked about this with Jenny Yang, but there is like, when I first started, there wasn't an Asian AF, and if you were doing an Asian show, it was run by some like old Road Dog Asian comic, and the show was called like Chopsticks or whatever.
I did a show at New York Comedy Club, and I didn't realize what the premise of it was until I got there. But it was called Rush Hour, and I was okay, that's fine. I didn't even make the connection, and it was all Asian and Black comedians. That was the premise of the show, Asian and Black comedians, and it was called Rush Hour. And I like got there, and I clocked the lineup, and I was like, oh.
That is amazing.
Oh my God. Did they make you do an accent? No, nothing.
Thankfully, nothing like that. But it was a different world.
To your point, like, you know, there's a lot of emotions around that Asian AF movement because I feel like that pushed, you know, that allowed us to have our little podcast. And we also have a show that, you know, by the way, if you're ever in New York, please come do it after you get the vaccine. But like,
once this happens,
you know, it's like, it's packed and it's a good time and it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of Asian and not Asian people. But there is certainly a demand for it. And I know there's a demand for it because I remember like around 2016, 17, after I would do a show like that, the DMs that I would get from girls, there weren't like, hey, are you single? It was like, thank you so much for representing Asian community. It was like, you know, I was getting different DMs compared to like my other comedian friends. And I was like, okay.
Well, it's crazy. It's crazy how the comedy apparatus underestimates how much Asian people want to see themselves represented on stage. Like I remember the first year of Clusterfest, which is a Comedy Central sponsored festival in San Francisco, which is, you know, that's where we are in America, in San Francisco, the Bay Area. And I remember looking at the lineup and it was like, you know, the people that were supposed to be there was me, Ronnie Chang, Bowen Yang, Patty Harrison, Awkwafina, like. And I noticed, I was like, why aren't any of us on the same show? Like, this is crazy. And so I went to Comedy Central and I was like, why isn't there an Asian show at this festival? Like, it's in San Francisco. You've got like huge Asian comedian names. Like, there's no reason there shouldn't be a show. And they're like, okay, do you want to do one? And I was like, okay, sure. And that's when I started. That was the first time I did my show, The Joy Fuck Club, at Clusterfest. And the thing is again, they gave us the shittiest space.
Ooh.
They gave us the worst like time slot, like this random afternoon time slot. And what ended up happening is we had the second largest line to get into our show of the entire festival. The only person who had a longer line to get into their show was Tiffany Haddish.
That's fair.
And I remember at Comedy Central, like guy coming up to me at the after party and being like, yeah, we just didn't realize that, you know, this would be such a big deal.
That Asian people like to laugh sometimes.
But then also it's like, it's San Francisco. It's like you might as well rename it Asian American Gay Community City.
Yeah.
You know, like that's where everybody is, you know?
Yeah.
If anything, it's weird not to have that on there.
Exactly.
You know?
And every time I've done it in San Francisco since, it's like been sold out. It's been, you know, just like packed, and it is crazy how they still underestimate it to this day. They refuse to believe that Asian people will show up. I gotta say like too that like the comedy from Asian people has changed a lot in the last 10 years too, by virtue of there being more of us. And I think by virtue of people like us perform, I mean, I didn't really perform for Asian people until I moved to New York and started doing comedy. There are Asian people in Chicago where I started, obviously, but there weren't like a lot of them coming out to comedy shows. And performing as an Asian person for white people, it conditions you to write a certain kind of joke.
Yeah,
about
100%.
Being Asian,
100%.
Versus performing for people that get it, you know,
and
come from the same background as you do or understand the experience. And so it really does change. It changed the way I wrote jokes about being Asian and from that perspective. And it also like, and also having a diversity of voices just within the Asian comedian landscape really forces you to write better jokes. It's not that just the same like tired jokes about being Asian that we have been writing for years because we're only performing for white people. It is like a smarter, it is a deeper, it is a like, there's just more depth to the level of joke writing, I think, that all of us are having to do now because there are so many of us.
That's the thing that people don't realize is like when you support an Asian comedy show like that, you're actually, you know, little by little making the comedians better because it's, you're like forcing us to reassess. It's like, oh, maybe this joke where I just do an accent is not funny, but I did it at, this set that I did at Rush Hour at New York Comedy Club, I guess it doesn't work. It doesn't work here because it's offensive.
I always think that there's like a huge depth of jokes that I know will only certain people will get, you know, whether it's Asian or Vietnamese American or whatever it is, that, you know, like for example, how Asian dudes, we're always putting blue lights in our car, right? You know, like that's a joke that I feel we get, but then like other people be like, what? But like, yeah. I have so many things like that I want to say.
Yeah, that is so, I mean, I hate to say it, but that is so true. Just...
I mean, there's so many things else I want to talk. I mean, can we talk about your Quibi show?
Yeah, I mean, which one? Because I was the king of Quibi for a while there.
Flex.
Okay, let's see here. I have a quote here.
Well, I think here, I think you were interviewed on Collider or something, and you were kind of talking about, I don't know which show you're talking about exactly here, and you basically said, like, you know, you're really thankful that Quibi gave you a chance because you mentioned that, you know, it's difficult for a gay show to get picked up on networks and to get a shot on you. And actually, when I read that part, I guess that's something I never really thought about because I feel like there's a lot of hype and excitement around like queer comedy in general, but I never thought about, I'm like, wait, is there a show with like two gay best friends? I don't know. I don't think Not a huge one
Not a huge one.
Certainly. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to hear more about that.
I mean, well, I'll say this, like, I can't really talk about it in full depth yet because the ink hasn't quite dried, but there is a second life to that show.
So, okay. Oh, that's great. That's great.
So I'm really excited and I can't wait to talk about that aspect of it. But I mean, it's hopefully going, fingers crossed, you will still be able to see the show, which I'm really excited about. But yeah, I mean, that whole, it's a movie, I guess, technically speaking, for Quibi came out of really just my friendship with Bowen Yang, and wanting to explore like the intricacies of our experiences as Asian men in the gay community, but also the differences in our experiences as you know, and wanting to say, like, you know, there's not one definitive take on what it's like to be gay and Asian in this community. I feel like a lot of people want to pit me and Bowen against each other in certain ways, or it's like, you know, it's that there can only be one mentality.
Yes,
again,
right, you know.
And that's not, I think, like, that's just not how Bowen and I see each other. And we don't, certainly our viewpoints and point of views are so different too, that like, I wanted to really write a story about two gay best friends who are also Asian and what that is like and how that is different. And yeah, it was really exciting that Quibi gave me a chance, and I really hope that, you know, people get to see it still.
Yeah, when Bowen did this podcast, like, I guess it was like a year ago, which is fucking crazy. He mentioned that a little bit. He said the way you guys met is like some white dude like put you in a group chat or something and said, hey Joel, this is Bowen. He's also gay and Asian. Good luck. Or some shit.
That's no, I mean, literally, you have an incredible memory because that is verbatim what the message said, that like this guy who, well, I don't want to talk shit, but like he put us on a Facebook message thread that said, you're both gay and Asian, you should know each other. And I think that really turned me and Bowen off to each other.
Really?
Immediately, because just not anything personal against, we didn't have anything against each other, but I think both of us were like, no, fuck that. Like, like we didn't meet for like a full year after that.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yeah, I did his show at the Pit, and that's how we met. But like, it was almost a full year probably before that happened, because like, I think we were just sort of like put off and being like, oh, this white dude wants us to meet because he thinks that we're the same, but like, so like, fuck that, we're not gonna meet. Thank God we did it in our own time and in our own way.
I Was there anything in particular that kind of broke the ice for you two where you're like, wait a minute, we should be best friends? Because like,
you know? I don't know. It was like a slow burn. It certainly wasn't like we met and we were immediately like, oh my God, you understand what it's like.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like one of those situations, because I think we really got to know each other slowly and over time. And certainly like we got to know each other as people before we started having those real deep like, you get it. You
yeah.
get it. Yeah. I mean, I cannot tell you how many times we've been rolling high off of our asses. Like,
yes.
In the corner of a club, just being like, you understand me, like nobody.
Yo,
understands.
Yes,
I
yo.
Love it. Just, yo, I love it. I know, love it.
You know, I know
you
that.
You see me,
yeah.
you see me, I see you. Like yes. that sort of moment has happened many New Year's. I gotta say,
Man, Fumi, you and I are gonna do that. Okay,
we're gonna do that. That sounds tight. That sounds fucking tight. Let's go to a bathroom together and do it.
I mean, I would love to, you know, understand that more, because for me, you know, me and Fumi, we're always like very into our heads about like gay Asian. Not, I'm sorry, straight Asian. Guys, we're this and that, blah blah blah. Is there, you know, is there you know, I mean, I'd love to hear from your perspective, what is that deep cut blue light in the car but for gay Asian guys, where queer Asian guys, where it's like you get it. I, you know, if is it, can you give me an example of one of those rolling off my asses, Bowen, and you are like, yeah man, this is something that like, whoa, I can't, you know, like people don't
yeah.
even know.
I mean, it's a lot of it has to do with, I guess, like internal gay politics of the ways
okay.
Asian men are treated. I think which it mirrors the way that straight Asian men are treated in the heterosexual dating pool. But I just think like there's a lot of othering that happens within the gay community already. Like I think gay men like to put it like if there's one thing gay men love, it's categorization. You know,
oh,
like, we have like you know there's a term for every kind of gay man.
Yeah,
you know?
Oh,
like
yeah.
twink, bear, otter, like and everything in between. Like, and so of course that like comes down to it delineates on racial lines as well.
Okay.
And so there's a lot just a lot of like discrimination that also happens. And then on the other side of that spectrum is fetishization that happens as well. And so like I think that's where a lot of our connection comes, because like we've dated a lot of the same dirtbags, I think. or slept with a lot of the same skeezes, and so we've experienced both sides of that, of just like having people you know, sort of discriminate against us because we're Asian, and then having people that are a little too into the fact that we're Asian and like feeling sort of trapped and feeling like, is it only going to be one of these, one or the other for the rest of our lives? Are we ever going to find someone who just treats us like a human being and doesn't see, you know, I don't want to say doesn't see our race, but like it's a one part of ourselves, not just like the entirety
of our identity. Can I ask you about that? Because I feel that, no, you're absolutely right. I think there are a lot of shared experiences between like a straight Asian guy and a queer Asian person, just like in the context of like romance and dating and stuff like that. And it's weird for, like, I always talk about this with like Brian Park, you know, this is something that's happened to us.
Yeah.
It's like, you'll be talking to a girl, she's not Asian, you think things are vibing, and you look at the background of her phone, and this is before BTS was popular. It'll be like, this is like if you had a K-pop band in like 2015, like you know, it makes you go like, it just makes you go like, you know, like,
yeah,
what?
Like, exactly.
I think the narrative is very clear with Asian women, because if an Asian woman was talking to a white guy and he had a fucking geisha on his background, she'd be like, I'm gonna get the fuck out of here. But I feel that the narrative is not so clear with Asian men, you know, queer or straight, you know. And like, yeah, I just kind of wanted to like, how would you handle something like that? And or like, have you encountered stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think like it is always a little. I always get my hair stands on end when I like am talking to a guy and then I go through his Instagram and like all of his exes are Asian.
Yeah.
His friends are Asian, and I always wonder like what is going on there, and like. And that is always like that. Yeah, it's tough. But I will say that like it's changing a lot. I think maybe also being in the West Coast, it is a lot different. Mm-hmm. I will say, because There are a lot more people of all races that grew up around Asian people. It's sort of erases the otherness of it a little bit. Like, okay, they're just used to it. They see us as regular people, instead of just like exotic, otherized sort of, race of human being. And so like, there's a lot, like, I think like, it really does matter, like, when you're young, like, who's colonizing your desires. And I think, like, when you're growing up around hot Asian people in L.A. or San Francisco, it really does sort of change the way you develop as an adult. And so I think that's one thing that I've experienced out here. But, yeah, I mean, there's just so much, like, if a guy asked me where I'm from, where I'm really from, within, like, the first, you know, 24 hours of knowing them, then like, that's a red flag for me.
Yeah.
It's right. Like, what do you, no one, why do you care?
Right.
Yeah.
What does that add dimensionally to our relationship at this early of a stage?
Is he going to like go into the back and change his t-shirt into like another thing that is a little bit more appropriate to your culture? You know, like, oh, this informs where we're going to go on our second date. You have to tell me, you know?
Listen, Mike, you know me on the podcast. I like to laugh like an insane person, spread joy through jokes and inappropriate comments. But is that how I feel on the inside in 2020? Absolutely not, Mike.
No, man.
It's a dark mess in here, dude. Sometimes I'm really sad. Sometimes I'm a little depressed. I'm really stressed. You know, and I think a lot of people with the pandemic, they're not really sure about job security. And that's a huge source of stress for a lot of people. And I think if any of our listeners feel this way, they should check out our sponsor, BetterHelp. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
Connect in a safe and private online environment. It's so convenient.
You can start communicating in under 24 hours.
This isn't self-help. It's professional counseling.
Send a message to your counselor anytime.
You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions.
Woo! All without ever having to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room. You know how those waiting rooms can be, bro.
BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches. So they make it easy and free to change counselors if you need it.
And it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available.
Licensed professional counselors who specialize in depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, anger, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief, and self-esteem.
I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/Asian. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/Asian. Well, you know me, Mike. You know me, right?
I know.
If you know anything about me, you know that I'm out there. Yes.
You're out there.
I'm out there pounding. And a lot of people are like, Fumi, why are you so good at pounding? And by a lot of people...
Yeah. I always ask that. Yeah. I don't even believe you.
By a lot of people, I just mean Mike. The secret is, it is Helix Sleep Mattress. Helix Sleep has a quiz that takes just 2 minutes to complete and matches your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. Why would you buy a mattress made for someone else? With Helix, you're getting a mattress that you know will be perfect for the way you sleep and pounding.
Everybody's unique and pounds uniquely, and Helix knows that. So they have several different mattress models to choose from. They have soft, medium, and firm, mattresses. Mattresses great for cooling you down if you get hot. And even a Helix Plus mattress for plus-size sleepers, because, hey, man, everybody needs love.
Just go to helixsleep.com/Asian. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to the customized mattress that will give you the best sleep/pound of your life.
They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for free for 100 nights, risk-free. They'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it, but you will.
Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helix.com/Asian.
That's helix.com/Asian for up to $200 off, and when you're doing your threesomes, 2 free pillows.
Now back to this.
Recently, your podcast won a Golden Crane Award, right?
Which I did not even know existed until.
It's very happened. So, funny story. I was one of the judges for that. I didn't judge your podcast. Just FYI, I didn't judge your podcast, but I was one of the judges, and it was like a last minute thing. And it was for people who don't know, it's for the Asian American podcasting. I want to make sure I'm getting this right.
You're a judge and you don't even know.
That's how new it was. Asian American podcasters, right? And it's a Golden Crane Award, and there's a bunch of different categories for it. And I will say that I had to listen to a lot of podcasts for this, and I listened to a bunch of different kinds. And you know, a lot of them are podcasts which are just trying to get up and running. But it was interesting because I'd known that you had, you know, Urgent Care for a while. I have to admit I hadn't listened to it, but I listened to it along with a bunch of other ones, and it was cool because while I'm familiar with your comedy, I got into the feel of your show very quickly, right? Because you and your co-host have such a strong thing. Like, it's clear that you guys have a whole banter back and forth with each other.
Right.
Do you and Fumi and I are always trying to think about this, you know, like what's our point of view? We like have long text messages about like what is our point of view, because sometimes we don't know. Have you had a struggle with that too as you go along, whether it's like a comedy point of view or whatever, as you've done this? Yeah.
I mean, like it's easier, I think, for us too, because we have a very clear conceit, which is the advice. Yeah. It's an advice podcast, which I don't know if we've mentioned that yet. And it is like, you know, it's like Loveline, but it's us. And yes. So that helps a lot because it gives us sort of a direction already to move towards. But it took us a while to sort of like figure out, to get our footing in terms of like tonally what the comedy of the podcast is, I think, because like it was sort of arbitrary. I just asked Mitra if she wanted to do a podcast with me, and then we sort of landed on advice. And then, you know, I've known Mitra for a long time and we're really good friends, but like we haven't worked together a ton as comedians. And so a lot of it was like figuring out what that rapport is and like what, like how, you know, goofy is it? How, you know, how genuine is it? I think it ended up working out perfectly because we both sort of balanced like wacky with like sort of earnestness.
Yeah.
I think I would say, which you sort of need for an advice podcast like ours. And so I think like that it was a real balance. It's always a balancing act between those two things. And I think that was the biggest struggle, was like figuring out like how earnest do we want to be handling some of these like really, you know, dark issues that people are writing into, and how absurd do we want to be in dealing with that? And so that's been sort of the journey of our podcast, and we're still figuring it out. I mean, we're only about a year in, and so we're still, you know, feeling that out and figuring out.
Do you know like kind of like what your fans look like? Because, you know, we're not that big, but we have some fans and we know what they look like, and it's always interesting to see like other people's podcast fan bases to see if they look like you, kind of, you know.
I will say I don't know like physically how they look, but we have a very specific makeup of like, it is, there are the number of bisexual women that write into our podcast, and specifically like flag for us. And we noticed it early on. We were like, wow, there's a lot of bi women that listen to this podcast. And then when we said that on the podcast, now every time a bi woman calls into the podcast,
I love
they immediately say like, I'm another bisexual woman. And so like, we tend to do like 5 calls per episode. And I would say about like 2 to 3 of them each episode are bi women.
What do you think it is?
I don't know what about us appeals to the bisexual community, but we get a ton. I mean, there's a lot. I think like a lot of it is like our specific fan bases brought together. And so like there's a lot of like comedy nerd, like improvisers from in college that listen. And then there's a lot of like queers and Asian people that listen from, you know, that I brought in and, so there's a lot, there's a mix, but that definitely stood out to us, is that the number of bisexual women.
That's so funny, because yesterday, Mike, we were talking about, because we had like a live stand-up show on Zoom, and we were like looking at our audience, and I don't know, somebody like, there was like a medical thing that was happening, and we like joked, it's like, is there a doctor in here, like, can you actually help? And then there wasn't any, and there were a lot of Asian people, and then we're like, you know what, that's not really our vibe. Like our fans aren't like lawyer doctor
Asians.
We're
not, we don't have the doctor.
No, they're like, they're like, they're like blowing glass and shit. You know what I mean? They got tattoos. Yes. Like, it's like so different, you know?
Yes,
like,
a different.
Like, they're like
different
Asian guys. They're like Asian people who've done anal a bunch of times. Like, that's kind of, that's, it's like different.
That's what
it's
we mean
like,
by blowing glass, by the way. That's the new phrase. That, hey, man, you guys been blowing glass, yeah, if you know
I
what
love
I mean?
That.
We honestly, we love it. We love seeing fans like that. You know, it kind of like solidifies, like, it kind of reassures us, like, oh, you know, maybe the stuff that we talk about, it's not like traditional stuff, but maybe people can relate to it. It definitely feels good.
If there's a million shows that are drawing in Asian audiences and you've found a specific niche within the Asian American
glass
audience.
Blowing Asians, that exactly. is the one, very narrow. I mean, you know, I wanted to also talk about this because about the whole voice thing, because, you know, as comedians, we're trying to do that like on stage as well, like, what's your comedic voice, I guess you could say. And I read this interesting quote. This was in context of like somebody of you kind of, you know, pushing back on people gaslighting you on, like, you know, if you want to have a, well, you know, let's have a diverse a group of people on stage. And somebody might say, well, why don't you just have funny people? And then, you know, you were trying to push back and say, well, there are a lot of funny people. You know,
yeah,
what else can,
I mean,
you bring? Yeah,
that's the given. Like, if
yes.
I'm booking a show, like,
it's
yeah,
given.
Everyone's going to be funny. And there are, like, I'm not like saying I'm booking diverse, like, slots doesn't mean I'm like not taking into account if someone's fucking funny. Like,
yes,
that is
yeah.
so ridiculous to think about. But it's also like, what kind of funny? Like, you know, and yes. also like, I'm not even just looking at diversity markers of like race and
right.
gender and sexuality either. I'm looking at, like, when you're putting together a show, it should feel texturally different from
yes.
comic to comic. And sometimes that means that it's going to be like comedically, and sometimes it's going to be point of view. And all of that is like a holistic view of looking at the diversity of a lineup.
Well, I think to just kind of bring it back to that experience you had with Clusterfest, how I think for a long time people were like, we can't have more than two Asian people or one Asian person on a show. They'll probably do the same jokes.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But now we've done tons of shows where it's, we had a comedy festival, Asian comedy festival here. And if you go to any given show, it's all like different kinds of Asian people, Asian comedians. And any given show, five different comics, completely different, wildly
yeah,
different,
yeah.
not just point of view, just like, styles, you know, storytelling versus one-liners, weird or not weird, all these different things. So it feels like, of course, they would be completely different. To your point, obviously, they would be funny. You know, that's
yeah.
just that's a given. Everybody in New York is good. You
yeah.
know,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, just oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was gonna say, just to add to that, like, if you listen to this podcast with Joel and then you go back and listen to Bowen's, like, you might as well, like. Like, yes, you guys are both Asian and gay, but Bowen is talking 90 minutes about Final Fantasy. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, my
like,
God.
Like,
yes.
like, it's just, like, so different. The vibe is,
yes.
like, it doesn't
Bowen,
even matter that you guys both like men. It literally has nothing
both,
to do with anything.
And you're,
okay,
yeah,
we
and
both like Final Fantasy, too. If you want to get into it, I can get into fucking Final Fantasy, too.
Well, I was going to say, also, you know, this whole time you've been drinking this, you know, after post-workout drink, so LA, just being beautiful and just, like... Oh yeah, let's talk about Final Fantasy. I want to do this. I hope this is okay. We so you have a podcast and it's called Urgent Care, and you do all sorts of advice. And to your point, it is surprisingly touching. I was like listening to it, and it's very funny. And then there's like I would say like hidden tenderness to it too.
Yeah.
There's, you know, because you are trying to help these people who get into sometimes hilarious, sometimes like painful situations. But we have a thing we wanted to do. You know, Fumi has a funny thing and he would like to pose it to you, and we can do
okay.
kind of like a small urgent care here.
Okay.
If that's cool.
Small.
I don't know why,
no copay.
No copay.
No
yeah,
copay.
Exactly.
No copay. No copay. Well, okay. I just wanted to do a quick advice segment with you. It's not that funny to me. This is actually like an issue I'm having, and I just wanted to like pose it to the people in this pod. Mike, are you still there? Did you leave? What happened?
This green screen is really tripping.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry.
Okay. I've got a question for you. Okay. Also, before we start, I know we've been talking about, you know, very touching, emotional, wonderful things, but I just gotta let you know, Joel. I was being polite because I don't know you, but inside I'm a very horny, respectful man. Okay, and this is I'm just always horny, and so this question is very horny. So please don't let that, put you off. So, okay, here's my question. All right, I have been with my partner for 6 years, and you know, quarantine. Mike recently got me a Fleshlight as like a joke. It's in my house. We're like, it's in our living room. We're like joking about it. It's funny, haha. And she actually went to Trader Joe's one time, and she's like, "You can use your Fleshlight now because I'll be gone for a couple hours." So I used it. She came back. We were like, "How was it?" We're talking about it, and then she asked me, like, what kind of porn I watched, or like she asked me what kind of porn I was into. And I do watch a lot of porn, and I go through a lot of phases. So whatever I say now is not what I'm going to be into 3 months from now.
For sure, yeah.
But
that's exactly
at the same time, it is a little weird, I think. And it's not that weird. But the thing is, my girlfriend does not watch porn, and I thought it would like freak her out because, you know, the analogy I give is like she doesn't watch porn at all. So if I told her what I like right now, it's kind of like trying to explain like what a Tesla is to an ant. Like I don't think like they're not gonna. It's just too like they're not gonna understand the vocab I'm using. There, like
yeah,
why?
There's too much backstory.
Yeah. You're like on season 9. Yeah. And yeah. She's not even a season 1. Right, you haven't read any of the books. Yeah.
So I was like, I don't want to tell you. It's like whatever. It's nothing too crazy. And then she got kind of upset that I wouldn't tell her. And then I was like, wait a second. You know, when it comes to the kink and stuff like that, if you're with a partner or whoever, like, where do you draw the point? You know, just because you're with somebody, like, do you have to be telling each other everything all the time? Specifically, like, sort of things you're into in terms of porn. You know, is there, I don't know why I feel this way, but there was a part of me that's like, no, that's kind of my thing. That's kind of something that I've had hold on to since middle school. You know, like, this is just me and the computer and, like, nobody else. So there was that aspect of it, but I just wanted to ask you guys both and predominantly Joel to see if that was weird that I didn't want to tell her, and if, you know, people should be communicating these things constantly.
Also, Joel, if you could indulge us and give Fumi a hilarious nickname like you do on the show. Because so people don't know, on Urgent Care, you know, you and Mitra give all the callers hilarious nicknames, which is like honestly one of the best parts of the whole thing. So if you can, I would love it.
Wow. Okay, so we've got porn, we've got Fleshlight. So many of the names on Urgent Care stem from puns on pronouns too.
Oh, yes, yes.
And it's so hard to do this without Mitra because you don't understand how much dead air is cut out from this.
Oh, 100%.
We go back and forth and we're like, okay, Fleshlight. what rhymes with light? And begging our producers to just cut out dead air time.
Well, no pressure. I mean, it's fine.
No. I want to do it, but again, you might have to cut out a lot of dead air. Okay. And think.
We can workshop it. If you're like,
yeah. I feel like we're like rap battling, but you know, with like.
Well, I feel like it has to come around. Fleshlight is really sticking out to me as it. So I think, and sometimes they're bad, and sometimes it is literally just like Captain Fleshlight. And we have now reached the point in the podcast where it's like, even if it's bad, that's just the first thought has to go in. So Captain Fleshlight.
Captain
is your
Fleshlight. Yeah, I think it works. It works with our coup theme as well.
It does
work with the coup theme. You know, congratulations, Captain Fleshlight.
I think that it is. There's a lot of answers to this, and I think it really depends on the relationship, and it depends on why you don't want to tell her. You really have to go back to the reason she wants to know and the reason you don't want to tell her. And there are different answers depending on what those reasons are for me. Like, if you're not wanting to tell her based in shame, I think it could be really, like, a fun exercise for you to tell her. And if she's asking you out of insecurity, then that's something she needs to work at. If she's just genuinely curious and wants to bring you guys closer by knowing this, then I think that could be really healthy for you to at least open that door a little bit. And like shed a little bit of light. Maybe not like the full slate of every single subgenre that you're into, you know, but
like a cook synopsis.
I think it could be, you never know. I mean, 6 years, you might need, like, it might be like a nice jump start to be like, okay, let's watch some porn together. Like, this is what I like. And I've done that before with partners. I've watched porn, the porn that I like with them. And it is like, well, sometimes it can be like, it happened semi-recently, but I like shared this porn video that I really liked and they were like, this is boring. And I was like, No, I was like, this sucks.
That's my fear.
I was like, you're coming for my taste now. It's not even like this is sick and disgusting. This is boring.
It's like you know when you show someone a show you're really into, like, hey, check out this part. This part's sweet. And he's just like, boring. They're just having a threesome. Yeah. Boring. Yeah. You know? Yeah. That's so funny.
So that's like, I would interrogate that a little bit more of like why you don't want to tell her. And I would ask her a little bit of like why she wants to know too.
Because
if it's just like general curiosity and from what you say, like that it's something for you, I think that's totally fair to have something that is for you. But I think like figuring out, you know, what you can tell her that doesn't ruin that for you, that still satiates her need to know, is probably where you want to land in like some happy medium.
What a thoughtful answer that you just improv.
That was so
that
good.
Was really, really good.
I will
ask her, but I think on my end, I think maybe it's a little insecurity on my part because I just know that like she's not as like horny as I am in life, like just in life. And it's just I just feel like it's gonna be a lot, and I don't think she's gonna be boring, but I don't want her to feel like that's what she's gonna do to make me happy,
right?
Because I'm happy with what she's currently doing. The current plan is good, you know. But
yeah,
I'm
the
just
current
look,
plan. You don't, plan. Don't you don't have to go up to the no, the next 5G, yeah, 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 you know, yeah, the more data plan.
Well, I was gonna say she seems pretty cool with the fleshlight, so I don't know why like moving up a level to like the porn.
My friend, well, she knows it was from me, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so it's like
also,
a family gift.
But fleshlight is like a fleshlight is like, it's a stupid,
disgusting to clean.
Oh my god!
I have
one
as well.
And oh my god!
Whenever I walk out to my kitchen and I see it in the drying rack, I'm always like, just like a disembodied ass, like just sitting in my drying rack. I'm always like, oh god, I gotta stop using this thing.
I was literally last week we filmed like a review video of it, and I was just like, where do you fucking put this? The drying rack? It turns out that's where you put it. That's really where people are putting it.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love. Yeah, you just have a bunch of cute martini glasses, and then your fleshlight as well. It's like, oh yeah, I gotta hang this up.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just very quickly, I think, you know, I'm taking all your advice for Fumi as well for me, because I think it does depend. Sometimes I want, you know, her to realize that like this isn't personal. You know, this is like my thing I am doing.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just want to do this, and like, I almost think of it as like, sometimes I just want to eat junk food, you know, like this is not about your cooking. This is about me wanting to eat junk food in a way.
I think there's like this big pressure for people, especially in monogamous relationships, to need to be everything for their partner.
Exactly.
And that's just not realistic. For most people, it's not realistic. You're not going to be someone's best friend and their fuck doll and their, their priest and their doc. You know, it's just not going to happen. You're not going to be everything for everybody, for your partner. And so, like, a healthy understanding of that and a healthy distance of being like, okay, there are some needs I can't meet, and that's okay, you know?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Is, I think, important to reach.
I think, too, I mean, I have thought about watching stuff with my wife together, you know, but I sometimes wonder if there's not like really a bunch of porn that's like, at least I don't know of, where it's like, let's watch this as a couple. You know, it's hard enough for me and Gina to find a Netflix show. It took us forever to find Bridgerton. Okay, like we were like, I don't know, we should watch Bridgerton, and then we ended up watching the whole thing. What's the Bridgerton of porn where I could like get into this, and it's a little something for her, a little something for me, you know? What high production values?
Because it's
usually just for one person. Like, porn is made for, I mean, I think in general, made for one person.
Yeah.
It's not like, hey, everybody get together and we're going to watch the new episode of, you know,
I'm literally picturing you like watching something and you pause it, and then you keep watching when she goes to the bathroom and she gets mad because you...
Exactly. You already watched the cum shot?
Yeah.
I am real excited about this next product because it is perfect for... Anal. I'm talking about Asian, not Asian listeners, but also I'm talking about the actual butthole.
Yes.
Okay. It's hard to believe that when we go to the bathroom in this country, most of us wipe instead of wash.
Gross. For years, bidets have been available, but hideously expensive, costing thousands of dollars. Really? That's crazy.
What? That's so crazy. The Hello Tushy Modern Bidet Attachment is here to democratize the blessings bestowed by bidets and offer clean buttholes to everyone.
Hello Tushy cleans your butt with a precise stream of fresh water. It sounds like an Evian ad for just $79.
Wow, it attaches to your existing toilet, requires no electricity or additional plumbing, and cuts toilet paper use by 80%.
Wow.
So the Hello Tushy bidet pays for itself in a few months.
Because with Hello Tushy, you don't wipe at all. Even the best two-ply just can't cut it when it comes to the hands-free poop experience.
Yo, ditch paper products and uncomfortable chafing when you switch to the soothing, cleansing stream of water from a Hello Tushy bidet attachment.
And every Hello Tushy bidet attachment comes with a 60-day risk-free, risk-free? What kind of risk are we talking about? Risk-free guarantee and a 12-month warranty.
Join millions of happy Hello Tushy customers right now and have a clean butt with every flush.
Go to hellotushy.com/ANA to get 10% off.
This is a special offer for our listeners. Go to hellotushy.com/ANA for 10% off.
hellotushy.com/ANA. Dude, 2020 has been crazy.
Fuck 2020.
It's been a very shitty year. And you know what? You know what makes 2020 really bad? It's not the COVID. It's not the fact that I lost my job. It's that I've been real stinky. I'm a stinky man.
You are a stinky man, man. That's why we do our podcast recordings remotely.
Oh, that hurts my feelings.
Good, because you smell terrible.
Well, I think that in 2021, I like to change that so we can start recording together again. I think it's time to change things up, and I think I need to start with Hawthorne. Hawthorne is a premium tailored personal care brand that's making it easy for guys to feel and smell your best.
It's really easy. You start with their quiz. On this quiz, they ask you things like, what's your favorite drink? How do you like to spend a night out? Where do you like to go? That sort of stuff. It's actually really fun. I love talking about myself. You answer all these quizzes. It's pretty short. It's pretty simple. And the products I got are awesome. I got two kinds of cologne. I got some shampoo. I have this really cool deodorant because I am also a stinky boy. And I think it really helps. You know, you got to take care of your beautiful Asian skin.
Wow, not gonna lie, didn't know people who shave their heads use shampoo. But if you want to upgrade your self-care routine, Hawthorne is a fun and convenient way to get super high-quality products tailored specifically for your needs.
Hawthorne even takes the risk out of it by giving you free shipping on your orders and returns. And if you don't like their products, they'll even retailer them for you based on your feedback.
Do what I did. Take Hawthorne's quiz today and get started on your personalized self-care routine by going to hawthorne.co and use promo code NOTASIAN to get 10% off your first purchase. That's HAWTHORNE.co. Promo code NOTASIAN. Hawthorne.co. Promo code NOTASIAN.
Welcome back to everyone's favorite segment. It is Das Race News. And we are with our guest, Joel Kim Booster. So, this is, my God, so many. Okay. If you want to talk about what a week it was, okay, we had Bean Dad, we had a coup, and then we had this thing, which everybody was sending us.
We get so many DMs about this.
So many
insane.
DMs, pretty emails, insane. Like Patreon messages. People were like sending me things on Twitter, tagging me on things, you know? So, of course, we have to talk about it. What happens? The three white women
from Dallas, Texas,
started a company and released something called Mahjong Line, and it is a bunch of how would you describe it?
It's Mahjong. It's Mahjong. Yeah.
But it's
Mahjong
tile.
It's Mahjong tile, but the thing is, it's like $400.
Through a Gwyneth Paltrow lens.
100%. Yeah.
Yes.
So,
and it's based on all this design, and they're charging up to $425 per set. And yeah, it is. I tried not to click through to too much of it, but I saw a lot of pictures, and it is very goopy.
Well, I think the thing that really rubbed people the wrong way, and I think that's why it got a lot of attention, is because in the description they said something like, Kate, of course, her name is fucking Kate. Kate was the one. Kate discovered that the artwork of the traditional tiles, while beautiful, was all the same and did not reflect the fun that was had when playing with her friends, and nothing came close to mirroring her style and personality. So, you know, she was kind of shitting on the original design, saying it doesn't have a lot of personality, which is like the meanest thing you can say to an Asian person. So, I think that's really that's kind of what inspired everything like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was reading about this, and I was like, you know what? I want to give this Kate person a chance. Maybe she did a lot of research and is real bedded in Mahjong culture or whatever. And I was reading it, and it says that you know, she brought in two other founders, Annie O'Grady and Bianca Watson. And I was like, nope, that's like just went even whiter. And I don't even know what happened there. So yeah, they're all trying to refresh this thing. It's something that I, you know, we saw something similar where in New York City, somebody was trying to have a clean version of Chinese food. They opened a restaurant that was clean Chinese food, you know, with the sort of insinuation that Chinese food, and they were saying it makes you dirty and it makes you feel gross or whatever. I don't know. What you must have seen this, Joel. What were your thoughts?
I mean, my first thought was like, who introduced this woman to Mahjong in the first place? Like, that's what I want to know, is like, where in Dallas, Texas is this woman, this white woman, like casually playing Mahjong? Like, I don't think I've ever encountered Mahjong like just casually in the wild before.
No, yes.
Like, I don't know. That's my first question. And like, whoever introduced it to her, like, why?
Yeah, let's find that guy.
I do think that is what's hitting this. I was trying to think about it, and I was trying to really think about why this was bothering a lot of people, because if you had come to me and said, what is one of your biggest values? I would not have said Mahjong. I mean, Vietnamese people aren't really that even. I mean, they are, but they're not, you know, it's not like one of our pillars, you know, like it's not who, you know, whatever. But this really is like set a lot of people off. And I think, you know, something you mentioned, Joel, is that it is like Mahjong is like deep Asian. It is like inner sanctum Asian. To you, you know, you don't come across it even as an Asian person. We're not going to get boba and then playing Mahjong with all of our friends. That is like some, like, you know, once you go to sleep, your grandma is still awake because she's a thug and she's going to go and play Mahjong with other grandmas, you know?
Well, I will say that this story really was illuminating to me of how many of my friends actually do know how to play Mahjong.
Oh, yeah.
the outrage that this sparked, I was like, oh, damn. I was like, this is like not just like people generally upset by the appropriation of it, but by people who genuinely love Mahjong.
Yes.
And like, they were like, my grandma taught me how to play this game.
Wow.
And I love it. And I've had a couple of friends on the timeline that have said that. And I'm like, oh, wow. I did not even realize that Mahjong was a part of your life, you know?
Yes.
Like, I just thought it was the game they played in Crazy Rich Asians.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. I think what happened is she probably watched Crazy Rich Asians this year, which is very problematic, okay? It's been out for 4 years. So somebody get her. And then she watched it, and she was like, I wonder what that is. And I think that's how she stumbled upon Mahjong. Because you're
it's definitely the biggest cultural, like, pop cultural moment that Mahjong has had.
So one thing that's interesting is while I was reading about this is that there is a variant, which I think they are playing, called American Mahjong.
Oh.
Did you know this? There's another version.
So they're changing the rules.
Yeah.
So they weren't even the first people to colonize Mahjong.
Like. The original colonizers colonized it, probably with guns. And then, like, and this is the refresh. This is the refresh colonized version. I don't know all the rules. I don't know how to play regular Mahjong. So, but I think what's funny is that I think there's American Mahjong, and I think it's like simplified in some ways or what have you.
Yes,
but
definitely.
It's definitely simplified. But I think the other thing that was sort of, you know, whenever there's like a refresh or a groupification of this, there's like an implicit thing that the original one is too Asian. You know, I think that's that there's like it kind of feels like, oh, well, this would be much. You know what's so great? The worst thing about Asia, all the Asians, you know, God,
you can only get rid
of them.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's the feel I get when something like this comes out, you know, and it's not even like they worked with a bunch of, you know, again, like the Chinese community something.
They could have saved themselves a whole, like, a lot of headaches by just having one Asian girl.
I know.
One.
On the founding team.
I just one Grace Chen,
like,
in there.
Sometimes I, like, legit do not understand the brains of how these people, like, how did no one stop them? Like, for like, if Mike and I were releasing our own Daishiki lines for what? if this podcast failed, and we're like, we gotta go, but Daishiki, because
we
said
go. We
if
daishiki.
We said if comedy doesn't work, we're going Daishiki.
Wait,
so
it.
If we like somebody in our life would have been like, do you think you might want somebody from Africa to like be there? Just like even for the pictures or something? Like some like my like somebody my sister would stop me. Somebody in my life would stop me. Yeah, but yeah. Like they got this far. They got investors, they did the design. Like not one person stopped them. And that's what's truly so baffling to me. You know,
I hope that they were introduced to Mahjong by like an Asian person, and that Asian person sort of stood back and was like, yeah, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Go for it. Yeah, no, make an Instagram account. It'll be great. Yeah. Anyways, we'll be buying one of these sets. It'll be fun. We'll put it along with the fleshlight. So check it out, or don't check it out.
Don't check it out.
Yeah, it'll be great.
So based on this article, we're going to just play a very quick game, just one round of, it's called Culture Exchange. And, you know, inspired from this article, you know, we wanted to ask you, okay, if they get Mahjong from Asian culture or Chinese culture, you know, what do we want from white culture? Is there something from white culture that we would just love to make either Asian or Korean or whatever
more
it
Asian.
Is? That,
yeah. More, what is something? Yeah. So they get Mahjong, but we get something in return.
Cultural exchange. Yeah,
cultural
yeah.
exchange. Okay. So what is the thing where like, yeah, you know, we get that. You know, is there anything, Fumi, that comes up top of your head? Where you're like, yeah.
You know, this isn't like me now, but I always thought like skateboarding was really cool. That's like a cool white guy thing. Like I just remember in like middle school, like all the girls liked the skateboarding kids, and like that's a very, I mean, like of course there are Asian and black and Latinos skaters who are like performing at world levels and stuff, but I do think skateboarding
is now an Olympic sport too. It was supposed
to
this year, yeah.
But I do see that being tight.
I do think it was a white invention, yeah.
I think it would be tight then. Okay, so then what happens is, okay, there can be this American Mahjong line, but now there's going to be a Chinese grandma version of skateboarding. I think that's the way it has to be. You know, it has to be, you know, it's got like a handle and stuff like that. And where she can hang her visor or something like that.
The skate park all have like these rails. You can like...
Yeah, it has rails and stuff like that. They can all... Like,
wheelchair accessible.
Yeah, there's slots at the at the park now. There's gambling.
Yeah,
yeah. Why not throw it in there? You know, I think that's cool.
This is not the game, but you know what I'm surprised has not been fully taken over by white people yet, considering where the trends are, is Chinese astrology. Like regular astrology is like so in the zeitgeist right now.
Yeah,
in such a major way. I cannot believe that Chinese astrology has not been overrun by people with like Instagram. Like that is the next thing that's gonna get stolen is Chinese straight up.
Let me tell you, so there's 100% somewhere out there a Mary Beth is doing it. Okay, yeah. She's getting the money to launch this line.
Yeah.
We've kind of started to. I mean, Korean people, I think, have been really killing it with this. But I think we should get cheese. We don't have enough cheese in Asian.
Yeah.
Shit.
I love cheese.
But Korean people, you know, they put cheese in some soups, like in the Korean army stew. They put like cheese in there.
Mm.
Oh my God, man! The things we could do if we got access to cheese, you know, like give us. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
well,
it's
many
like,
of us can't handle cheese. Though.
Many
that's,
of us
that's,
can't.
I know,
that's but that's the thing. That's what I want. I want the gene for cheese or whatever.
Okay,
gene
yeah,
processing
yeah.
for cheese. We get cheese, and then can you imagine the shit we could get into? The shit that you know people could do. Yeah, that would
well,
be great.
I think that's the problem is people are already getting into shit. Yeah, my thing is, I think we should take red hair.
Baby, that's a good one. And you know what? I can tell you've thought about that for a long time. You want that? You want that Asian recessive gene? I feel.
Exactly.
Dude, we should have a recessive gene where like one of like every fourth child has a different kind of hair color.
Aren't there some Japanese people with red hair?
We have like my aunt has like full, straight up brown hair, like light brown.
Naturally,
hair.
Very
naturally.
Like,
naturally.
I mean, that's my hair is brown. Is like
oh really?
Brown, especially in the summer. Yeah, it's like dark brown, and then it lightens up in the summertime. And people always think I dyed or like got highlights or something like that. But
yeah.
It is like there is like a spectrum of hair colors in Asia, but
yeah.
I don't think that like ginger red is one of them.
Yo, nice.
A redhead Asian, so hot, dude. I love it.
Dude, a redheaded cheese eating skateboarding Asian.
Woo!
That's
yes.
where we're at, baby.
The future.
Baby. The future.
I love it. All right, and that was our podcast, everybody. Thank you so much for listening, Joel. Thank you so much for taking the time and coming on. We had so much fun. Where can our listeners find you and your work?
You can find me. All my social media handles are I Hate Joel Kim. you can watch Big Mouth or History of Swear Words on Netflix. Check out my Comedy Central special, or any of like all my clips are on YouTube too. So,
damn,
hell that's yeah! A, and you can also find us on the social media at Asian Not Asian Pod, and I'm also on there at The Fumiabe. That's T H E F U M I A B E.
And you can find me on Instagram at Nice Pants Bro.
Please support our Patreon page if you want more bonus content. We've got bonus monthly episodes. We have extra race news. We just put up random videos on there. And if you donate money, we give you a shout out on the podcast and we slide into your DM. So it's a good time. Check that out at patreon.com/asian.asianpod. And we also have a Zoom stand-up comedy show that, Joe, if you ever want to do it, I know some people don't want to do Zoom shows, but it's good. We had like 100 people yesterday. It's a good time.
It's fun. Super fun.
We do it every other week, so we'll have fun reach out to you. But come check that out. The next one's going to be, what is the next one? Oh, January 22nd. So go to asian.asianpod.com for tickets. It's always a good time. I think that might be it, right, Mike?
I think that's it, baby.
All right. Well, Joel, thank you so much. Anals, thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you guys next week. Bye. And we are back with our monthly Patreon shout outs. If you don't know what we're doing right now, we always give a shout out on the podcast to the newest members of our Patreon crew. So if you want to check that out, go to patreon.com/asian.asianpod for access to bonus episodes that come out monthly. In addition, we just kind of release a bunch of random shit on there, like nudes. And by nudes, we mean our stand-up comedy sets where we bomb. But, nice. Hey, just as good. Just as good. So now we're going to play this game where we guess our new members' ethnicity based on their last name. Honestly, we've been doing this podcast since 2018. It was funny in 2018. I feel by 2022, we're going to get canceled for this segment. Like, it's getting there, you know?
If anything, though, it's just we're getting too good at it. You know, they might upload our brains into some sort of database analysis thing where that you can like now the government can tell, oh okay, you know, when which Lee is this one? This Lee is coming from Taiwan. You know,
Yeah.
It's too dangerous.
We're getting too good. But here we go. Oh, this person, I'm so glad she donated. I think I met her or I saw her at a Zoom show. It wasn't even a Hack City show, just a random Zoom show. Fan Kong. K-O-N-G.
K-O-N-G, and then how do you spell the first name?
Fan, like the...
Like the fan, like the power fan.
That's Chinese as fuck, bro.
That's Chinese as hell. And
that's so Chinese.
And Monster Island, King Kong. Why not? Throw it in there.
You're Donkey Kong Asian. That's great.
With the tie on. Yeah.
Okay, then we got Olivia Duong, D-U-O-N-G. Ooh, is that Viet? Duong?
Oh, Duong Zung is... Viet as fuck. That's Viet.
Sometimes I can tell if you're Viet because usually they have like Catholic first names. Does that make
sense? Yes. That's a very
Olivia.
Thing.
I have a lot of Italian friends that meet Olivia because they're super Catholic. So,
yeah,
gotcha.
There you go. Yeah. Anthony's a good one. Mm. Sometimes Luke. Sometimes.
Ooh, I definitely know Anthony Duong for sure.
Right. There's no Jesus's though. Get a couple Jesus Nguyen's in there. Jesus Nguyen.
I don't know why they won't go there. Like, that's the guy. Why are we beating around the bush? Why are we teasing Catholicism?
That's the guy. Okay, yes. Go with the guy.
Jesus is the head of the penis. Just fucking put the lips on it.
What a way to do it. What a way to do it. I apologize, Jesus. Okay. Continue.
Then we got Jason. This is an interesting one. Chuang. C-H-U-A-N-G. That's like two Chinese names put together.
Wait, Chuang, C-H-U-A-N-G.
It's probably like, but pronounced Chang.
But not like, there's no like hyphen or something.
There's
not
no hyphen.
Like, Chuang.
No. That'd be crazy if there was a hyphen. Like divorced or like Asian parents who remarried and or whatever and wanted to keep two last names. Is that how that works?
Oh, and keep two names?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I always think about how like complicated it is if you're like an Asian person and you marry another Asian person, but it's a different Asian person. So then like, because like if I marry, like... Not me, but like but if
this happened to you,
know what I'm saying?
You married a
well,
Korean person.
Saying. Right, yeah. but then she can't be going around calling herself, you know, right. Nguyen.
No, because
then she,
that's mad confusing.
Be like confused.
That's
it's so,
so confusing.
Confusing. It wouldn't make any sense. It would make any sense. So this person is a child of divorce and it's a broken home.
I'm so sorry about that. Jason, we hope you're doing well,
Jason.
Man. Next we got Jennifer Ang, N-G.
N-G, Chinese.
That's Chinese. Then we got Stephanie Chen, C-H-E-N, another Chinese.
So many Chinese.
But you know what? She spells Stephanie with an F. That's got a little bit of an attitude. I'm gonna go and say that's rebellious, aka Taiwanese. Okay, you guys be rebelling. You guys are not about that cultural revolution.
Those guys be rebelling. You know, they recently changed their what's it called? Their passport, so it doesn't say China.
I love that. What does it say? Just
so
Taiwan?
That's yeah. I think it just says Taiwan. It says the Republic of Taiwan, which is just so like that's. I love it. Just like that's like a little petty little thing. It's like don't call me by your last name, Mom. That's not my name. Yeah.
Okay, we got a couple more here. We got okay. This one's confusing. Saj, S A J S. I think this is like an Indian name. Saj, like Raj, but Saj.
Saj. S. I wonder. Yeah, it could be South Asian. You know, that's
I think
cool.
It's South Asian. I don't know. This could be like, I don't know. I don't know what's an Indian.
It's
S.
Probably like Shinju Kumar. You know, like
Shinju Kumar. This is it's an Indian guy who had the baby in Shinjuku.
Yeah, yeah. But then also Kumar still. So yeah. that's what it means. Because why not?
Okay. Then we have Sheena Lu L U. I believe that is Chinese.
Chinese. Then we got say yeah.
Then we got Cornelia Ding. D-I-N-G. Ooh, ding.
D-E-D. Well, I'm sorry, what?
D-I-N-G. Like ding dong. This sounds like ding. This is like a made up Asian name by like a white person made this up kind of thing.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, dude. You know who this is? This is, who's that lady who wrote Harry Potter?
Oh, this J.K. Rowling.
This is J.K. Rowling, yeah, actually.
This was, it was Cho Chang or yeah, Cornelia yeah. Ding. And she went with
Cornelia.
Cho Chang.
that also sounds kind of like a, you know, Harry Potter kind
yeah,
of name.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Cornelius Ching Chong. You know, what of the great house of mandarins.
Yeah, she actually messaged us. You see her message? She had like a awakening listening to this podcast. She said
what
she said something like, you know, growing up I never wanted anything to do with Asian boys, but having listened to you guys, you know, I wouldn't be mad if my Asian children became like you guys or something like that.
Well, now we ruined that because we just ding-donged her name. But thank you for that.
She's gonna take away her donation.
She's gonna take away her free card.
Okay, we love you, Cornelia. Thank you so much. And lastly, we have Nanette Coffey, Coffey.
Coffey. Well, this is just a good old American name.
I think it's like a British. Nanette sounds very British.
Nanette does sound very British.
I don't have any
Nanette
friends in Coffey.
Coffey.
Okay.
That's a cool name.
That's
I'm
a pretty
say
cool name.
That, you know what? This person might be from, but like, is like from like the Caribbean.
Ooh,
you know? Nanette, a little bit of British, a little bit of that, but then also
the British
a
islands.
Little bit of yes, exactly. One of the little former little colonial colonies.
You are from Saint Lucia, I think.
Whoa, man, so nice there. Hey, thanks.
Hey. Well, thank you guys so much for donating. And again, if you want to get in on this, please go to patreon.com/asian.asianpod to hear your name on this podcast. Love you.